Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap in association with Redsbet. Redsbet, the Anfield Wrap's partners, where if you lose, what happens is a course that you nominate eventually gets to win. That is the way in which the whole thing works. If it is for you, feel free to have a look and sign up, redsbet.com. And if it isn't, don't worry about it in the slightest. We're pleased to partner with them as they are supporter orientators and a strong initiative, but always be gamble aware. We're talking through Liverpool's 1-1 draw with West Ham United. I have in front of me Adam Smithy and Simon and Mike Nevin. I often try to start this sort of conversation with how it feels, Mike. It was, I think, in the end, almost difficult to separate game and context, which is never really that good a thing. In that, you know, there's, I think you can maybe look at Leicester and West Ham back to back now, midweeks, sort of evenings, even though it was the Monday night game move from the weekend, and you do sort of feel as though there's lots of perfectly reasonable ways in which you can argue a point is all right in both of those games with the way in which they play out, but in the end, a point in both of them probably isn't.
Yeah, I mean, that just, I suppose it's a sense of mini crisis, the context being that the lead has been whittled away. I suppose, you know, if you want to look back a little bit further, going into the City game, we had an opportunity to make it 10 points clear, create a real cushion that would have stood us in good stead. All of a sudden, it's down to three. I wasn't, last week, I was completely sanguine about the Leicester results, because in isolation, that can happen. Liverpool didn't play particularly well on the night. But I was expecting a bit more of a response last night, and we didn't get it. Albeit that, you know, there are so many mitigating circumstances with the injuries. It wasn't a familiar looking Liverpool lineup. It's a very unfamiliar midfield, and we never really got to grips with the game. That said, could have won it towards the end, and that just sort of adds into that sense of frustration. But yeah, 2 points out of six feels a bit more pressured.
Ian, it's interesting Mike uses the phrase there, response. If you're the manager, you're sitting here thinking, well, I'd quite like to play the team that has played together before to some degree and feel as though it will elicit that response. But it was a bit of a shock when the team sheet came out.
It was, yeah. I mean, the last thing you expect. And I genuinely didn't see anything until the team sheet itself, so I hadn't seen any rumblings of injuries. So when I saw a midfield of Lallana, Fabinho and Keita, I was kind of like, okay, that's interesting, because after, I think it was after the Leicester game where Lallana played for a while, I was kind of like, well, we're never going to see Lallana play again. And now all of a sudden he's one of our starting three in a match where we do need a response. I think on the whole, I'd have been okay with both results. And being rational, I'm okay with both results, because I can rationalise both of them away. I can rationalise the Leicester game in terms of, well, there's two penalties and a red card that were not given, so, you know, realistically we're at the mercy of the ref as well as our own performance. And if we get those red cards and that pen, then it changes that game round. And I can rationalise last night in terms of, well, it's one of those, isn't it? Sometimes you get these games where it just doesn't happen, and we can make a West Ham team with enough of its own injuries and vital players missing look like absolute world beaters. And I think I'd be rational about it if one was in October and one was in March, but the two of them within 5 days of each other, it's something we need to get out of immediately. With the Bournemouth game, needs to be a getting out of this.
It's one to me where, Adam, if you substitute on the 21st of December, Friday the 21st of December, as I think Ian's saying, we go to Wolves, we win 2-0. If we'd have drawn at Wolves, and so more accurately, if we'd have played this game that we played last night over at West Ham on the 21st of December, get the point. And then you have this Wolves win, and this drops in last night, and we're talking about that. We're all absolutely buzzing. We're all absolutely flying. We feel fantastic about it. It is the it's the back-to-back nature of these two, which I think is legitimate cause for mild concern. I don't think it's cause for enormous concern, but it's legitimate cause for mild concern.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with all of these things is context, isn't it? And we've got these two back-to-back results in the context of the arguably the most competitive season there's been in the Premier League. And I was looking just out of interest. This set of fixtures last season, the third of Feb last season, Man City drew 1-1 away to Burnley. And it didn't matter because it put them 9 points clear of United. So everyone was just able to go, well, it's just one of them, isn't it? We've had two one of thems, but they've come at a time when it means that City can probably, well, will go level with us when they beat Everton. And then go in front of us because I think they play before us at the weekend as well, don't they? So I think
they play on. No, we play before them.
Do we play
weekend.
Before them? They play Chelsea. So we're back in front of them. Sorry.
Not a very good scenario yet.
Well, true, but you know, there does come a situation in which you know you're looking at it and going, well, goodness, those points dropped feel absolutely gigantic because we've got somebody that is right 3 points behind us, which is the closest, I think, from the very minimal research I did this morning, it's the closest that any second place team has been to a team that's had 62 points, that's had 60 points, I think. So you've got to take it in the context of all that actually a draw away to West Ham isn't bad. And judging by this season's results, where Leicester have what, beaten City, beaten Tottenham, drawn with Chelsea, something like that, in the context of that, that wasn't bad either, especially as with what Ian's saying about the refereeing results, not the performance not going against us in that game. Coming one after the other at a time when it feels like we need to win basically all of our remaining games to have any chance of winning the title, it feels crushing, and that's a bit mad in and of itself, really. But we just want the title so much, we want it so desperately, and it feels like they were two very winnable games. I think that's the other frustrating thing. I think if we'd have got that, exactly as you say, Neil, if we'd have done that away to Wolves, who everybody's acknowledged this season is a brilliant team, or we'd have got a draw last night away to Tottenham, or something along those lines, everyone would go, yeah, fair enough, that's a decent result, that. But West Ham have lost the last three against quite poor opposition and all of that sort of thing. And then, of course, you find out after the match, when you're watching the match, you have no context of what's going on with the illness and injury. And then after the match, you find out that Milner travelled separately to the rest of the squad and blah, blah, blah. And rather than feeling like it makes you feel better because you think, oh, yeah, well, it was ravaged with injury, it feels like excuse making. And it's just a bit, it's just all the context of all of that just adds in, doesn't it?
There's, Mike, it's interesting when Adam cites Manchester City dropping points at Burnley around this stage last season. Manchester City themselves dropped points at Newcastle not too long ago now this season. You have a little look, and I just had a little look through there. Us last year around February, we get beat in the cup by West Brom, the Swansea, and we had a bit of a run into that. We pick a relatively strong side, we drop points against Swansea, get beat, we drop points against Spurs around this stage of the season. Looked at United around this stage last season, side that finishes second and comes pretty close to 90 points, drops points against Tottenham and Newcastle around this stage last season. It does seem to me to be a little bit of, and maybe you can talk yourself in and out of this stuff and you've got to be careful, but it does seem to be a period of time where clubs who've got genuine interests in silverware can find it a little bit difficult, I think, because the injuries have either began to pile up over the hectic Christmas period, or the flip side is everyone's got their eyes on when the Champions League games restart and are running.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting that you referenced the Christmas period, because that was what I was going to say, really, is that Liverpool sort of breezed through that. Then, of course, they've got the game at City, which is massive for them, and they lose. And it's the other thing as well. I mean, I said this a few weeks ago, that I expected the title race almost to revert to something approaching normality in the final third of the season, because the pace at which City and Liverpool, and to a degree that Spurs have gone all season, is completely unnatural, as Adam alludes to. I just don't think it was sustainable. Now, obviously, in Liverpool's case, injuries have begun to hit hard, and we've managed to sort of play through them to a degree. We've always managed to be able to put out an 11 that looks recognisably strong, but game after game after game, when you're suffering, and in particular losing Wijnaldum and Henderson. I mean, that's a massive blow in
losing
terms.
Trent and Gomez at the same
Gomez
time.
Gomez at the back,
And then Gomez and Lovren at the same time.
But I think
it's basically the entire right hand side of your team, decimated.
And I think, I mean, Liverpool will always play the majority of the games of their games on the front foot. They'll enjoy 60-70% of possession. So injuries are more keenly felt further up the pitch. Now it would be cataclysmic should one of the front three become injured, but nonetheless, in terms of the momentum of the side, the tempo of the side, and the engine room, if you like, if you want to use an old phrase, then Wijnaldum all season has been one of Liverpool's strongest performers, and they really sort of tick around the way that he sort of recycles possession, keeps hold of the ball, defends the ball when in possession. And without him, and also the sort of durability of Henderson and his ability to switch play, then we don't have the same rhythm. And I think just the loss of those two in particular last night is something that any side would find hard to withstand.
Just to come back to you on that, you mentioned the, you know, when you see Fabinho, Keita and Lallana, there is something as straightforward, isn't there? As firstly, they're not as physically imposing as Wijnaldum and Henderson. But I think there's another thing as well, which is that they're not... they've literally never played together before. I mean, I did the review show before, and I was trying to sort of work out whilst going through it. You know, these lads have not played competitive football on the same side, and that I would venture, Mike, that is something that you don't want to be having to pick against the side who are seventh or eighth best team in the division away from home on a Monday night. You know, you can maybe get away with that if you've got Anfield, comfortable getting away with that if you've got a Huddersfield or a Burnley coming to Anfield and people can find their way. It's just not ideal.
No, it's a tough fixture. I think we've all been sort of lulled into a false sense of security around away fixtures all season because Liverpool coped with them so well for so long. And you think about wins at Watford, at Burnley, at Leicester, at Wolves, all against these sort of middle ranking sides who, for the early part of the season, we began to dismiss as fodder. Some of those sides are actually coming into their own now. So it wasn't an easy fixture, and again, just to sort of re-stress that point, in isolation, a draw at West Ham it's not a terrible result by any means. It's just the pressure cooker situation of holding onto a lead. And I think in some ways, I mean, just looking at it from a personal point of view, I actually feel more stressed about the situation now that we're in front, being, you know, the pursued as opposed to the pursuer. I think that brings with it a different kind of strain. And it's something Liverpool are going to have to cope with for as long as they remain in front.
I was actually quite enjoying being the pursued rather than the pursuer, apart from the reaction of a section of our fan base whose heads have fallen off at the match and on Twitter, who don't seem to have the bottle for the running at all, aren't willing to embrace the fact that there is a challenge against us. I think one thing you've got to look at from last night is the comments Jürgen made afterwards, that after training on, what day were we on? After training on Sunday, they had to change the team three times. So it wasn't making three changes to the team, it was changing the team three times. So I think it was obviously a long way from the formation and the pattern of play that he'd intended. Milner didn't train in that pattern of play at all. So we're instantly, we're weaker all over the place. So while West Ham may have a major amount of injuries themselves, I believe it's nine first teamers missing at the moment.
Yeah, the two they were missing most prominently are the lead centre half, Balbuena, and Arnautovic. They were the two that they will have suffered the loss of the most.
But they've had 11 lads who have at least trained together for a couple of days, whereas ours haven't. It does look like Dubai has just been a chance for people to catch a virus of some kind.
It's not a good advertisement for the Dubai Tourist Board. It's not really at the minute.
I think, you know, with that talk of sort of changing the team repeatedly, Adam, you know, I think that again sort of feeds into his selection in that, you know, he feels as though he really wants to get Milner on the pitch. I think the idea that he has to pick Keita, I think, makes him go with Lallana ahead of Shaqiri. I wonder if, and maybe the nature of the game, possibly not, but, you know, he's used Rafa Camacho, and I wonder whether or not at some sort of point he may, and it might be this weekend against Bournemouth, he might go with him at right back and try to get a more physical presence, more attacking presence, more quicker, more dynamic there, although it's where they'll be restating Milner sets up the goal, albeit one that was offside. But I think the thing that may concern him is, and it may be because things aren't ticking behind, it may be because things aren't quite right, but Liverpool do have their first choice front three on, and they don't create a ton of chances, and I'd only really say Sadio Mane, arguably both this game and the game against Leicester, you're able to say plays is at least 7 out of 10 game.
I thought Firmino it was probably his worst performance of the season. I mean, certainly in the second half, he couldn't put a pass to anybody. And I think it might have been Phil Blundell saying it on the post-match show that it was almost like he was sort of hitting it to where somebody will probably be and hoping that they're there. Like, it was very, very lackadaisical from him, really. I think the problem is that the manager has maybe got a bit more faith in some players than I have. For example, I think Lallana is a big one on that. I wouldn't mind if I never saw Lallana again, to be totally honest with you. And I know he sets up Milner for that, but he didn't do a lot else. But the manager really likes him, and there are certain things that we have to embrace as reality in the situation. And I think all of the people annoyed that we let Klein go away on loan, for example, are ignoring the fact that the manager clearly didn't really like him, and he wasn't really going to play him, even if he was there. So we might all disagree with that, and I might disagree with him picking Lallana, for example. But the manager likes him, and the manager rates these lads, and he's going to pick them in these games, isn't he? So. I don't know, really.
He doesn't really have any other option other than to play Shaqiri. I think Shaqiri,
he could do Camacho right back and Milner midfield.
He could do, but I think people are sort of going on about Camacho. You've got to remember that he's completely inexperienced,
and he's 19.
And
do you want to throw him in and say Felipe Anderson murders him for 60 minutes, and then you've got to try and rebuild his confidence?
Looking at that game last night, if you're asking. Albeit that Milner's unwell, I think 99% of people would say you're up for Milner because you're just taking the safe and sensible option. So throw in a sort of an untried, relatively untried teenager at that stage of a title race where you've got
away at West Ham.
At West Ham, amid all the strain and the pressure of it, it's a big call. And the other decision to sort of leave Shaqiri on the bench, I mean, Shaqiri's probably had most of his best impact coming off the bench. He is that type of player, and I think it's a shame really that over the last five or six games he seems to have struggled a little bit. His passing seems to have gone awry over hitting balls. He doesn't have the same sort of buzz and movements around the penalty area. I don't know whether it's just a mini crisis of confidence on his part, but obviously, and the manager sees fit to play Lallana. He sees him in training. He's a long-term favourite of Klopp. I think that's the other thing to remember. And to be fair, I actually didn't think he did too badly last night. And I think it was a sort of pre-arranged thing for him to come off after sort of 68 minutes. But I thought in general, given that we're probably all at certain points this season sort of completely written him off, I thought he did enough to suggest that he can still be of use. But whether you want him to be starting with him is another matter.
Yeah, I'd prefer not to be starting with him. You've got to bear in mind at all times that he was basically Klopp's first lieutenant on the pitch, wasn't he? He was the man who started the press. He was the man who would take the instructions to pass on to the team. Klopp trusted him from day one to do the job that he wants to, and he led the line and he kept possession. The Adam Lallana that we have now is basically, so many injuries have set him back that he'll probably never be the player he was 3 years ago. But you can see what he can still do, because it's his feet that so bedazzle the linesman that he's looking completely the wrong way to see whether the ball's still on the pitch when he plays it through to a lad who's 3 yards offside. So if he can contribute like that, I'll have it. I think he's there as an option in possibly smaller games. He's not going to be an impact sub unless you want somebody who's going to keep the ball up the top end of the pitch when we're already ahead. You can't see him being a game changer anymore. But I'm with you. I think he played quite well last night. I don't think he was a problem. I don't think he was a passenger in any way. Once you got into the second half, he faded. But you say once you get into the second half, most of them fade, apart from Keita.
Ian, the first half, we ride our luck a little bit at 0-0. We make it 1-0. Again, I think that one of the... And I'll say it again, you're away from home. They're a good side, so you've got to bear that in mind. If there's a patch of play... I think, for instance, I think Liverpool managed the game pretty well second half. I think that they closed the door. I think West Ham tire, Liverpool closed the door and ensured that, listen, we're not going to, nothing daft's going to happen here. And whilst there's a bit of them trying to get Anderson in, and you understand why, Liverpool do a good job, I think, broadly of at least ensuring that bad things were going to cease to happen in their own half.
Although there weren't many good things.
We'll go on to that, but what... If there's a bit of game management where you are looking at it thinking, and maybe this is a Henderson thing, maybe this is a Wijnaldum thing, they really should be, I think, on the front foot at 1-0. I think this is a side of Liverpool, in the last four times they played them, they put 16 goals past them. This is all West Ham's worst fears. We've played really well and we've gone, it's not the same as Leicester where we were on top and we score. I think it's one where if you are West Ham, you're thinking, we've done really well. They've gone 1-0 up, and I think that that's where, if you, you know, in hindsight, I think that's where Liverpool should have absolutely put the hammer down.
I think if you're West Ham, you're thinking, we've done really well, and these spawny bastards have gone 1-0 up with an offside goal. That is a point where you should be in their heads. They should be thinking it's unfair. They should be thinking everything's gone against them. Although, you know, we do come up with 73% possession and more shots on target than they manage, albeit those shots being a little bit soft. I'm not sure what would count Lallana's as, whether that was a shot or a failed pass now. But at that point, we should be pushing, we should be looking for the second goal. Because at that point, you were sitting there thinking, we do need the second goal. We were back to that point where you're thinking, we need the second goal to be sure of this, because we didn't look like we were going to survive on a 1-0.
I think, Mike, what you see in that first half is you see tempo, and the lack of tempo, and what tempo actually is and what tempo actually means. I think that's where you... For me, there was times where you had a Henderson and Wijnaldum shaped hole in there when West Ham had the ball, but I actually think it's in terms of saying, right, this is the way that the next 10 minutes now, we saw that, I think, when we went away at Wolves, where we weren't great to start with, but when we decided the next 10 minutes is played on our terms, I think you see the Henderson step up and see that. You've been seeing Wijnaldum do it all season. That's where I think, that's where we really miss them, I think, in the period after we go 1-0.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say sort of what you lack on the ball, because on the face of it, Keita and Lallana are players who can run and carry the ball, and I thought Keita did it in sort of fits and starts last night. It was a bit frustrating. Lallana, albeit that I still think playing within himself, not protecting himself from injury, but not quite at full pelt. But you get momentum and tempo through a different style of play. I mean, it doesn't have to be players running at the ball. That's not the way Liverpool have played this season, other than maybe in the final third with the front three. Wijnaldum and Henderson just zip it about a bit quicker. They release it into the front three. They get on the ball more. And what you noticed last night is that Salah wasn't in the game first half. Firmino wasn't in the game all the way through. Only Mane really sort of had any real surges. So there just wasn't enough of Liverpool getting ball into the final third for me. And I think that was just the result of the players that were in the side.
And Mane was basically coming into play as number 10, because he was coming in deep. So when he was at his best in the first half, he was coming in deep to take the ball. I think that's the point where you realise exactly how effective Henson's crossfield diagonals can be, because he will put it into space, he will switch the play. Last night, obviously, Fabinho tried a few times, but if you've got Fabinho alongside Henderson, then you've got more chance of that happening from one or the other. If you're pinning all your hopes on Fabinho, you're limiting yourself straight away, and obviously not deliberately limiting yourself, just the circumstances, but Henderson will make a hell of a difference in that position.
It's also about ball retention as well. I mean, Liverpool were not only sort of sloppy with the passing last night, I think pretty much all through the side, but Keita's style of running with the ball, there's a greater risk really of losing possession there. I mean, he's the type of player he wants to try and make things happen. To an extent, he managed to do that on a few occasions, but equally,
especially in the second half
especially. But he does give the ball away at times, and when you begin to start losing possession, then the overall feeling of superiority quickly fades away. Just in terms of us not kicking on after the first goal, I mean, it was only 5 minutes really that we had before West Ham equalised. So I'm not sure that was something by design. I don't think we necessarily sat off. I just think we conceded at the wrong time. And I suppose we were fortunate really before the break not to concede another one.
There's now 25 games. This was the 25th. There was 24 before it, Adam. 24 league games where opposition managers could look at how Liverpool set up for set pieces. And I think that we've seen an increase in the last recently. I mean, I think you can see when we go to Watford that Watford have done a bit of work on it. But I think you can see that they'd had a good long look at that, a good long think about that, and had 2, 3, 4 strategies to counter let's have it right. You know, what's been a really, really good defensive record from set pieces, and they get the reward.
Yeah, I think it's something Sean Rogers has been talking about a lot in the review, hasn't it? That eventually that's going to start to cause problems if we keep playing in the same way, and hopefully that's a little bit of a wake-up call now for the managers to try something different, you know, move, change it round a little bit. I think it's really easy to look at a goal and say, you know, what a brilliantly worked free kick, and it was a brilliantly worked free kick. sorry, what I mean is I think it's easy sometimes to look and be critical rather than say what a brilliantly worked free kick. And it was a brilliantly worked free kick that they've obviously spent time looking at and doing something about. I think that the interesting thing is that there's the little check from Noble on Keita, isn't there, that stops him from being able to run on. And that is the sort of thing where, in another way, you know, with another referee or another set of assistants, you maybe see a free kick given there, like, because there's a little trip or a little push or whatever. I don't think it is one, but there's another one, you know, there is a referee. Yeah. And it is just one of them where the Liverpool line will probably say, well, you know, we held our line, we did exactly what we're supposed to do, and one of our lads was tripped up. You know, what you can't mitigate for that, if you like. But I think the problem is that now, as you say, opposition managers are going to be looking at it and thinking about it, and we need to be careful now not to give away those sorts of chances, because it's been the last two games, hasn't it, or two or three games, I think, where those sorts of free kicks have happened and we haven't had a counter for it.
It's a narrow line as well, isn't it? It doesn't spread out particularly wide. It seems to be very, very sort of concentrated in and around the D, and slightly beyond that. I think if you want to be critical, and I agree with Adam, you know, it's a well worked free kick. It's an excellent piece of play. It's well researched, if you like. But it's possibly the fact that whilst it's a high line at a free kick, it doesn't drop. There is an opportunity to set the high line that creates a situation where the players aren't on top of your goalkeeper, but you have the opportunity just in the lead up to the kick being taken just to drop a couple of yards, and that gives you potentially someone who can get back and foil Antonio in that situation. That would be my only criticism, but it's you know you're picking parts and everything there.
My only criticism of it would be that the goalie didn't move. I've not criticised Allison at any point. I think he's been basically beyond criticism all season. But he doesn't even move, and it's not like it's so quick he has no chance to see it. He's just completely wrong footed and doesn't go for it at all. I think in terms of the lad that blocks Keita off, if one of our lads does that against Martial for United, I think it's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Absolutely, yeah. But equally, if we got a free kick against us, you'd go, well, you know, he's barged into it. It's one of those where I don't think it is one. If you see,
no,
what
it's
I mean.
Within the letters but of the law.
It's the inverted commas you see them given, and I think the defence would maybe, if you were sat down talking to them, they'd go, well, we did exactly what we were supposed to do when one of the lads was tripped up.
But there is something, Adam, and then there's the Rice header. And, you know, it's a free header, it's 8 yards out. And my thing is, and I'm happy to say, fair play to them, they've worked it really, really well. If you've got to have a little think about things, if you're effectively conceding one goal and should arguably concede two, if that then happens, you know, because, I mean, Rice should score, we're lucky that he doesn't. He probably can't believe the time he's got. When he watches the video back, he'll probably be amazed the space he ends up in.
Yeah, that's true, absolutely. I think, again, it comes back to that thing of mitigating circumstances, doesn't it? And I think we've got a bit of a problem at the minute, in so much as we've got a makeshift back four, and of that makeshift back four, I don't think Van Dijk's playing particularly well at the moment. I thought he was quite poor against Leicester. I thought it was maybe one of his worst games for us, actually, against Leicester. Allison is doing the same sort of thing. He seems to have thrown in a few little wobblers recently in terms of his distribution and all of that.
The header last night, the header's really assured, apart from the actual pulling off the technique.
Where we could have been in real trouble. There's been a cut. So you've got the two of them maybe that have been the absolute linchpins of this defence, not playing particularly brilliantly just at the moment. Robertson seems to be going through his, you know, worst spell since he signed for the club. And then you've got Milner, who isn't a right back, playing at right back, also been ill, and, you know, and has just come back from a suspension because he couldn't get anywhere near the pace of Zaha in the Palace game. So it's one of them. The frustrating thing is that it all seems to be happening at the same time, and it's not excuses, because at the end of the day we've got games to win. And, you know, when people have been saying about Keita, you know, oh yeah, but he's been playing on the left, okay, but other players have been playing out of position, they've been doing a job, and he hasn't been doing a job out on the left, and we've got games to win right now. So yes, there are mitigating circumstances, but that doesn't mean that you can just shrug your shoulders and go, oh well, we're going to concede some goals then, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, the two instances in terms of the goal and the Rice header, I think they're two entirely separate things. I mean, the separate moves, one's in the air, one's on the floor. For the one where Rice gets the free header, we're a little bit switched off, and I think I agree with you. I think Van Dijk has probably just put together two of his less good performances. It feels like sacrilege to criticism to criticise him, but I think a couple of times there was actually in the second half there was another one that was nodded wide by Diop, I think,
yep.
where Van Dijk didn't actually win the header, was ball watching actually, and just in terms of the going back to the right header, it's just a little bit of aggression needed really. To you know, if players are going to block you off, you've got to stand firm and you know to resist that physicality. And I don't think Liverpool did that particularly well last night. We've all become very caught up in our defensive solidity all season, and not without reason. But that doesn't mean that some nights. I think sometimes as well. I mean, for me, without wishing to be overly critical of Matip, I think. He's just a slightly destabilising presence in the back four, because I think he's the most timid of the three or four centre backs that we've got. I don't necessarily think that impacts on Van Dijk, but it doesn't help.
I think if you ask Van Dijk who he wants to play centre half with,
it's Lovren.
I think he'd have. Well, I think there'd be a list, and I think that it'd be Lovren or Gomez first and second, and it wouldn't even surprise me if it was Fabinho third.
Mm. Yeah,
and I think that's really interesting. You know, I get the impression that there's times where, maybe just a body language thing on the pitch, but where Van Dijk's like, "Hang on, what's going on here now?"
Yeah, and he goes on those mazy runs he's done in the last two games. He's gone, and that's fine. If you see the gap opening up, fair enough, go for it. But his final ball's been dreadful on each of them and left us exposed. And I think we've been fortunate not to have conceded on the break twice after Matip's gone wandering up the pitch and then just basically passed it straight to one of their players.
Can I be overly critical of Matip at that point? I never want to see him move forward again. Mm. I found it quite amusing the first few times he did. It's like, hey, great, a bit of madness going on. Yeah. And then he gets 10 yards away from his starting position, and instantly you can see him trying to figure out what he's supposed to do next. He's got no purpose. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know where the ball's going, so he keeps going. Then he's thinking about where he should go next, and he keeps going, and he keeps going, and then loses in the penalty area, by which time he hasn't got the speed to recover.
Yeah.
He's an absolute liability when he does that, and he needs to stop immediately.
And I think that for me is the one big problem with the Liverpool defence. Is a lot of people have said, you know, oh, Matip's all right for a fourth choice defender. That's, you know, sort of one of the lines that people say, and that is true in so much as if he was a fourth choice defender. But with this defence, with Lovren, who's, you know, always has little niggles and injuries as the season goes on, with Gomez, who's very young and whose body's been put under a lot of pressure after you know, career threatening injury early on in his career, lest we forget. Matip was, and the fact that he's second choice right back, Gomez. Matip was never, he's not a fourth choice defender. He's just not. He was always going to be used than another team's fourth choice defender might be. And I don't think he's good enough.
And my issue is actually more that I think he's more than good enough to be a starting defender for a side that wants to finish somewhere between, let's say, fourth and eighth. But whether or not he's the makeup of what you actually want in a fourth choice defender. That what you want in a fourth choice defender is like what you want in a sub goalie, in a sense. You want someone you know is going to catch everything he should.
Yeah.
Basically. And that helps. You're not looking for bells and whistles, someone who can catch everything he should. And my sort of what's been frustrating me about Matip in these last few games, and I think you can go all the way back to Palace, Mike, is that I think he's, you know, as I say, if he was Crystal Palace's first choice centre half, playing every week, leading that defence, being the dominant figure of that defence, you could well imagine them being a tidy side. They've got a good centre half partnership anyway, Palace, but you take my point that feels like more his lot in life than the idea of being number four on this list.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's down to the style of player he is. I mean, you could say that he looks elegant on the ball, and you know, that would take Ian's point. I mean,
not after the first 10 yards.
He has the capability to come out of defence. Some of his passing out of defence is good, but he's not that sort of rumbustious, solid, you know, sort of almost old-fashioned centre half that you might be talking about there, where you just do the rudimentary things, you get rid when you can. He's not, and again, sort of lacks that sort of aggression that you might associate with that type of player. I think that's where, you know, if Liverpool had a more physical person, I mean, Lovren really is that type of, he is that type
very
of player.
Much so.
So he's a bit, you know, he's a big miss at the moment, and it's an eternal frustration that he seems to pick up, you know, sort of a myriad of injuries
and ailments,
and he's, you know,
more ailments than any other player ever could come across. I think.
Yeah,
and I can't pull that last.
He does, doesn't he? Sickly child, but he's. And
the world's biggest sickly child.
The worry is now that is that because he's been sort of absent on and off over the last, you know, sort of month or so, is that you wonder whether the sort of the improved Lovren that we saw sort of in and around Christmas, whether it takes him a while to get back to that level of performance, whether he loses rhythm, whether he's lost a little bit of match fitness as well. So I think that centre-half problem, given that Gomez is pretty much long-term now, I think, reading between the lines there, that's going to be a big issue for us for the rest of the season.
And maybe even with an eye on next season. I'm sort of the view, and it's terrible because it does always feel like you're talking about the footballers you've just seen. If I was recruiting for Liverpool this summer, I'd be all over Wan-Bissaka and Rice, and I'd be saying to Declan Rice, you're a centre-half for this club, mate. I wouldn't be messing about. And then, you know, I'd have Lovren as fourth-choice centre-half, go compete with Gomez and then Wan-Bissaka to do bits as well, and go from there. But anyway, that's an aside, just letting you know, listeners, who I'm going to be banging on about come June onwards, the lads I've watched recently. There is, in the second half, I think they've gone, Ian, to be honest with you, West Ham. I think that from about 55, they've got that one out ball, which is Felipe Anderson, that they keep trying to do. I mean, it was unbelievable in the ground. He had like 50 yards of space, because he just stood on the touchline, made the pitch absolutely huge.
So you don't get that from the TV, you missed that.
You probably, at times you might have thought, why West Ham only playing with 10? Because he was so, but it was the idea of, right, whenever we get it out, whenever we are on the pitch, he'll be available in that little, that enormous pocket of space. So all the goal kicks were going down the other side. Little bit of football, and then look to release him, and then look to play from there, and then have him ideally running at Milner in space, and Liverpool players having to work over. But apart from that, and this is where the frustration, I think, comes in, is the West Ham side we were playing in the first half was the one in the second half was nowhere near as good as the first half West Ham side, and that's why you do come away from the game feeling like, God, you can do a point all right stuff as much as you want, but there was a chance here for all three.
Yeah, the second half feels like the West Ham you kind of expected. It feels like the West Ham that would have come to Anfield to play like that. It feels like they've decided to sit at that point, and they are just going to defend what they've got, which, you know, at home, you can completely understand. They're in a good position. A point's great for them, a point's better for them than it is for us. So they're creating nothing at that point, realistically. They're not threatening us. Alisson has that save in the first half, doesn't he? Down to his right that he deals with. But he's not actually challenged at any point in the second half. Our back four isn't really challenged. Milner isn't as exposed as you would expect him to be. Certainly not in the way that Zaha exposed him at Anfield, but that then frustrates more, because at that point, you know, you're looking at going, we've got the players with the technique to get through their back line, we should be able to do this. And as we were talking before about Keita, it looks like one of Keita's big things is going to be trying to run through as many men as possible, and when it comes off, it's going to be fantastic. When it comes off, he's going to score the greatest goal we've ever seen, at which point he'll probably just leave the pitch, sub himself, and never play football again, because he'll have achieved it. But when it doesn't come off, it's not working. So with him charging through, with Lallana still on the pitch until about the 60th, 68th minute, with Shaqiri, you would expect us to be able to unpick that lock. At the point where we moved Salah out to the right again, which I think we need to do. We need to have Salah out to the right and Firmino down the middle as our starting point. At that point, you think, well, there are a couple of moments there where Mo nearly gets in. There's that curled shot where he uses the man's disguise, and you can see that he's doing the stuff he was doing two seasons ago. And all the days, some of that stuff comes off. And yesterday, I think it was just a day when it wasn't going to come off, because I think we had 10 men who were out of form at the same time.
Definitely an element to that, Adam, but there wasn't, you know, the one thing you'd say again, and you'd have said after the Leicester game, Liverpool don't work Schmeichel enough, they don't work Fabianski enough. I think Fabianski actually has a really good game, proactive goalkeeping. There's some stuff he comes for when some of the keepers might choose not to, or maybe we play the ball a little bit too close to him, it was right in front of me. So I think he's busy in that regard. He's busy fielding more than saving, if you see what I mean.
Yes. I also think, though, that the misshapen midfield, for want of a better phrase, doesn't help the front three, because they spend most of the match not knowing where the pass is going to come from, who's going to pass. Keita holding on to it, as Ian says, you know, probably longer than he needs to, so that it just naturally makes it a bit disjointed, because they never know when the ball's going to, and then when they get it, they're like, oh right, now we do it, but then it's not there. And so that, I think, combined with West Ham, you know, defending well and defending with 10 men behind the ball, so there's not a lot of space. So it's not as easy to unpick the lock when there's no fluidity to what you're doing, I think. And I also think that the business of Mane kind of seemed to put everything into the first hour, really, didn't he? And then he kind of fell off a little bit in the last half an hour, because I think he was, the as you said earlier, the best and the brightest of that front three. So if we'd have beaten Leicester, I wonder whether the manager would have felt a little bit more freedom to be a bit more experimental. Talking about Camacho before, for example, I wonder whether if you beat Leicester, you can lose instead of draw with West Ham, and you've still got more points than we've got at the moment, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And so I wonder whether in that situation the manager might have said, you know, let's not go for the safe option of Milner, let's go for the more exciting threat of Camacho down the right and see what happens, because if they get in down the right repeatedly for the first hour, well, I can put Milner in there. But there isn't that at the moment, that because of what's going on and because of the lack of fitness and the illness seemingly going through the camp, there just isn't that ability to be a little bit more free and a little bit more experimental, and that and the front three felt very very staid last night. It just didn't feel like it was the exciting front three we've seen the rest of the season.
I think there's a thing to be said on formation as well, because we look better as a team when we go to the two, when we go to the 4-2-3-1 in the last 15 minutes. Suddenly, weird dichotomy, Keita manages to get further up the pitch as a holding midfielder than he does as an attacking midfielder, and the whole game moves further up the pitch. That could be West Ham tiring and moving back and just putting everything with the 10 men right on the 18 yard line. But we're making more progress, so possibly if we'd moved to that earlier, possibly Shaqiri that bit earlier might have made a difference. I think again it's not so much fine margins this time, but timing on making decisions.
You mentioned Shaqiri there. The one I think actually does make a difference is Origi, and it's a shame in the end, Mike. I think he comes on, I think he's bright, I think he's involved, I think he's disruptive. I think that's a thing, and that's fine, by the way. That's not to act as though he's being daft. I think he's gone on, he plays a bit of a funny position, but I think he's doing what his manager wants him to do, in that he's rattling West Ham, he's pressing them, he's running past them, he's making them turn round. It's just a shame that he doesn't get the moment at the end, because it would have capped what we would now be sitting around talking about as a fantastic substitute appearance.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he did his usual thing. I mean, he sort of runs into the corners, he stretches the play, he gives you a little bit of an outlet. He's got a decent sort of physicality about him. And yeah, I mean, it's a great chance at the end. Just doesn't quite connect with it. I mean, on another day, sometimes that might be the type of shot that actually flummoxes a keeper. But yeah, I mean, but at the same time, I mean, again, just looking at the squad as a whole and looking at Liverpool's striking options, were it not for the goal against Everton, I think we might be looking at Origi as a slightly less of a proposition for us.
I think we'd be looking at him as having gone.
Yeah, well, you've very much so. And it does point to the fact that when one or more of the front three is sort of off colour, and obviously for me, you know, I just couldn't seem to do anything right last night, then the options off the bench are hugely limited. And you'd like to think that Liverpool could have somebody with a little bit more, well, a few more goals behind them in the last 12 to 18 months. And yeah, I think he did okay, but we don't want to, you know, we don't want to be relying on Origi really to get your goals that win games. I think that's just an unfortunate circumstance of where we are sort of squad wise in the attacking positions.
I think the big difference Origi makes last night is the fact that we got somebody who's large and physical on the pitch, because up until that point it was notable how much bigger West Ham were than us, especially with the way, you know, we lose Gini, we lose Henderson, and we basically replaced two lads who are around about 6 foot with two lads who are about 5'7", and straight away the physicality in midfield's gone. So I think Origi makes that difference, because he is stretching the play, because he can hold the ball, because he's got a bit of muscle to him as well as a bit of height.
Quick little thing, looking at the table then itself, where we find ourselves, it is two dropped, it's three clear, Adam. I think, let's be honest, we all have to expect City to beat Everton on Wednesday. The reason why is because Everton at the minute, you know, forget all the other stuff, all the other things that anyone might want to say, Everton at the minute are in a mess. They're not playing good stuff at all. it would be genuinely surprising. You know, change the kits, don't play it at the Old Lady. You know, you put it wherever you want, pretend it's a neutral game. Looking at the way Everton have literally performed, let alone before you even get into the results across the last 10 games, they'd be going some to be able to stop this Manchester City side currently. But the flip side of that is, well, Newcastle recently just took something off Manchester City, so it's not like the City side is impossible, but it's difficult to see how they do it. But they presumably win, and then we find ourselves back second in the table.
Yeah, and one, you know... It's that old adage, isn't it, of points on the board are better than games in hand, because we'll have a game in hand, but I think somebody said on the post show that game in hand is United away.
It is United away.
So it's not even still, like but we've also got the game
point,
in hand.
To be fair, we've got the points on the board though as well, because they just go level on points.
Yeah. So but, yes, true, but as you say, level on points put us going second, yeah. And we've played this game where they have a better goal difference than us before, and it didn't work out as fun last time. I think Everton are all over the show, and I said at the start of the season that I fancied them to get relegated because of what dire straits they're in behind the scenes at the club, which I think is just being dismissed by too many of their fans, really, because they don't really want to acknowledge it. But I think the club's in real trouble, and I think. That it wouldn't have taken. I think if they'd have lost to Huddersfield, for example, instead of beating them, I think it would be a very, very interesting last 13 games for them, because you just don't really see where they're picking up any wins, because they are all over the show. On the one hand, now would be a really, really, really nice time for them to kick into gear and find a little bit of something under Marco Silva. On the other hand, we go there soon, and so if they're still all miserable and unhappy when we're there, then that'd be much nicer. But. Yeah, the table's a funny one, isn't it? Because we're all talking about, we have talked throughout the season about, you know, well, once the Champions League kicks back in seriously. And yes, City have got a significantly easier game than us, or two games than us in terms of the opposition, but they won't have at the next stage, and they start to need to take that seriously. And they'll also then have an eye on the prize of the FA Cup. They will start to get distracted, and the thing is, you would have expected when they lost to... It was Leicester first, wasn't it? When they did the Leicester Palace. Was it Leicester Palace first? Palace first. So when they lost to Palace, you'd have thought, oh, well, they're really going to sort themselves out now and kick on. And then they lost to Leicester. And then they lose to Leicester and go, well, that'll be the last game they'll lose this season because Pep will get them sorted. And then they lose to Newcastle. So it's not like City have suddenly, after having a bad result, got themselves together and gone, no more of that, we're not letting that go again. So you can see there are more twists and turns left in this title race. I think the big question comes down to who gets the run of the ball a little bit more often in the games. I think it might be as simple as that.
Mike, you said at the start, when we very much started this conversation, we were saying two from six, and it's frustrating, two from six. It's worth saying that Liverpool arguably haven't played well since Brighton away, but if they... You know, Brighton away, Palace at home, Leicester home, West Ham away, Bournemouth home. If we beat Bournemouth, it's 11-15, and we might look back on that as the blip. That this might be right now Liverpool playing the worst football that they're going to play over the course of this season. Look back to last season and see how the side strengthens itself through second half of February into all of March and April. And I think that, you know, Klopp is a man who has his methods and goes about things a certain way. This, you know. As blips go, you can say 2 points in six, but if they do beat Bournemouth, and Bournemouth is obviously hugely significant and it won't be easy, but if they do beat Bournemouth, it's 11-15.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 4 points dropped. I mean, they feel like a critical 4 points at the moment. I agree with Adam, really. I think there'll be, you say there'll be twists and turns, yeah. I mean, I think there'll be more than people think, because... It is a pressured situation. It's a pressured situation for both sides. The narrative is that Liverpool are feeling the pressure, but it's less than a week since City went and lost a game that no one would have credibly argued that they would. I'm looking at that Everton fixture slightly different for them, in the sense that, yeah, there's the whole idea about Everton supposedly, you know, sort of not wanting to beat Manchester City. They're professional footballers. That manager needs a result. I remember making this case exactly 5 years ago in 2014. And in that game in 2014, Everton actually gave a good account of themselves, albeit they lost.
Goalkeeper was crap, but there was a few.
Yeah, and it, oh, but just in positional terms, then Their fixture at Everton is similar to our fixture this week against West Ham. And, you know, Everton are going into it on a bad run. West Ham were on a bad run last night, but were able to fashion a performance. So it's still, you know, City won't be looking at it as a gimme, let's put it that way. And then whenever they go away from home for the rest of the season, that will still apply, as it does to us.
None of us are ruling Tottenham out. They are 5 points behind us now. They are 5 points behind us, and I think you do feel as though they've got to clamber over the two, Mike, before it goes to everyone else.
Yeah,
they've got to. I think it, right now, if you know, for instance, if City didn't exist and Tottenham are 5 points behind us, we'd be talking a lot about Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've probably dismissed them because they've lost so many games, but that comes from not drawing many. If I was a Spurs fan looking at the league now, I might be looking at these five points that separates ourselves and Spurs, I think. But they've got the opportunity within their own hands to come to Anfield and win and put themselves certainly, you know, sort of within touching distance of ourselves. So I think also the nature of the way that they've been winning recently, they're without their two key players, but I think in the last three league games they've scored in the sort of 79th and 83rd minutes. So they're hanging in there, and those are the type of wins that do breed confidence and belief. So they'll have talked themselves into an idea that they're still in the race. They're very much the outsiders of the three for me, but you can't discount them. In some ways, I don't know, it's almost like a welcome distraction away from the whole talk about Manchester City, that we can talk about somebody else.
I'm at the point where I'm not even thinking about Spurs at the moment. I can see them there. I can see the chance they've got, but the sole focus is City. I think if they go to Everton tomorrow and win, which they're more than capable of doing, but this Everton side, as appalling as it's been since the derby, notably since the derby, since the Origi goal, which seems to have fractured something in their psyche, when they came to Anfield, that was the best Everton side I've seen come to Anfield since the 80s, because they were a footballing side. Somewhere within them, they may still have that. They've got the experience of going to the Etihad last season under Koeman and holding them. They can do these things. I'm holding out that they might do something, but most notably, we're not talking about the fact the City have got Chelsea at the weekend, and that could really make a difference to them. So if City beat Everton tomorrow, they go top on goal difference with us with a game in hand. We could see them draw at Everton, lose to Chelsea, us beat Bournemouth, and all of a sudden we're 4 points ahead. I'm trying to do the maths in my head. 4 points ahead with a game in hand. These things can change very, very quickly.
Tottenham?
Look, obviously you can't rule them out. They're only 5 points behind. I just cannot see in this most competitive Premier League season there's arguably ever been that a team that's lost six games already is the one that wins it. I know they haven't drawn yet. That's got to end at some point. And you might find it's one of them weird things, like, you know, when Bannister broke the 4 minute mile or whatever it was, that once they do get one draw, then they start getting draw after draw. It might be one of those weird sort of things. I know, yeah, just straight in with the modern day references.
Yeah.
I've been listening to Cool and the Gang.
Like when Edison created the light bulb, or telephone.
The point being, Mark, once somebody's done something, you know, lots of people then start to do it. So you might find that I just refuse to believe that Spurs are not going to draw a game before the end of the season. And look, if they don't draw a game and they don't lose anymore, and six, you know, then they will absolutely deserve to be champions, because that's what will happen probably. If they don't draw and win all of their remaining games, there's a very good chance they end up as champions. And you have to put your hands up and say, well, then they deserve that. But I just really would be amazed if a team that has lost six times doesn't lose again this season and manages to overcome two teams that are better than them in reality.
Okay, thank you very much indeed to Mike and Evan, to Ian Salmon, and to Adam Smith. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week in association with RedsBet. Take it easy, relax. We've all got a big job to do next Saturday, a huge job. Let's enjoy it. Sports Social Podcast Network.